Are you still trying to figure out what it means to be a journalist? Well, so are we. Welcome to Small Talk, Big Topics.
I'm Adrienne.
And I'm Stephanie.
So today we're going to be covering Sonia Nazario's two-part new series called Orphans of Addiction that was published in the Los Angeles Times in November of 1997. This series covered the topics of American poverty, child abuse, and drug addiction. And the style of the reporting, Nazario described it as being a fly on the wall. So she spent 4 months with different families with her photographer, Clarence Williams, and they basically analyzed and watched how these families lived day in and day out. And in the end, the series received a lot of backlash. So let's just get into it. Let's talk about these stories that were covered.
So Sonia Nazario and her photographer Clarence Williams are focusing on children in Los Angeles County, and she starts off with a pretty startling statistic in her article that 80 to 90% of children that are on welfare in this area in particular have substance abuse problems in their families. So it's extremely prevalent in this specific area. One of the children that they spend time with is Tamika Triggs, who is only 3 years old. Her mother is Theodora, who is unfortunately an addict, addicted to crack. And I'm going to read a quote from the article for you guys so you can understand just how vivid this piece is and, quite frankly, upsetting. Theodora, who is HIV positive, slams the solution into an arm marbled with track marks. Then, intent on smoking the last crumbs of crack, she gently lowers her girl onto a mattress moist with urine and semen. As mom inhales, Tamika sleeps, her pink and white sundress absorbing the fluids of unknown grown-ups.
I mean, it's just heartbreaking to hear this. And Nazario even goes more into detail about the 4 months that she lived with, or not lived with, but followed these people. Everywhere this mother went, she took this poor three-year-old child on the streets to these crack dens. At one point, she wrote that Tamika lived in 9 places in 1 year, in garages, hotels, her mother's boyfriend's houses. And it's just crazy. It's child neglect.
At one point, she's in the kitchen and she's walking on a broken glass jar. She says she does nothing. The reporter does nothing. She watches the little girl who's 3 years old drag her bleeding feet to the couch and pick out the glass herself. How do you do that? She definitely takes the idea that journalists should completely separate themselves from their subjects to the nth degree.
It's crazy.
She watches a three-year-old girl starve for days on end.
What Stephanie is referring to is that Sonia reported that at one point, the little girl, Tamika, was taken to a clinic and that the doctor reported that she lost 10% of her body weight in a week. So she was down at 3 years old to 36 pounds. So, and also she talked about how the child didn't eat for 24 hours and she didn't do anything about it. So you have
her starving.
You have this child that's starving. You have this child that's laying on semen on a mattress napping. This mother is neglecting this child, walking around with her on the street, begging men for money, shooting up next to her daughter. And this reporter does absolutely nothing.
Quite frankly, reading it, I was sick to my stomach. It was hard for me to even digest the words on the page.
Do we also blame these neighbors that are witnessing this little girl going through all of this? Because at one point, she also speaks about a neighbor that's trying to help and trying to give the girl food, but she notices that the neighbors are too afraid to say anything because they fear that Tamika will end up in a worse abusive home in foster care, which is terrible to think that this little girl who's stuck in this horrible situation can't even escape to anything because our childcare system here is just so looked down upon and scary.
I would say there was at least half a dozen incidents throughout these stories where someone did help the child, either a priest or, just like you said, a neighbor or a girlfriend, and all of them refused to call child services because they believed it would be a worse situation for that child. That is such a failure on our government's end. How is that possible? At the end of the day, that's why Nazario is writing this story. So in one of the interviews with Nazario, she ends up defending herself and the way she reports. She says, "I think what was beaten into me early as a reporter was you don't intervene or change a story that you're writing about." She goes on to say, "If you can put people in the middle of misery and have them watch that misery unfold, that's often the most compelling way to write about these kinds of stories."
It's the whole fly on the wall mentality. She's just, as a journalist, she's doing her job, analyzing and reporting what she sees. But again, it's the ethics behind it is just, I don't know if I would be able to sit and watch these stories kind of expose themselves to me. And I don't think I would have the heart to just watch and not do anything.
I don't think I would either.
Should we go over one more story before we take a overall look at this article? Nazario goes through another story of a family that she followed. It's Ashley and Kevin. And so their father had family money, but ended up using it all on drugs, which was about $800 per week. Their bathroom was covered in mold. They would go weeks without bathing. I don't know how the school did not notice this. Kevin was extremely aggressive because he saw how his father abused him and he was just acting out. The daughter was a little bit more of a peacemaker. At one point, the father took them out of school because they thought they were moving, and they missed school for 4 months. And Sonia Nazario writes about how Ashley would just stand outside the schoolyard and just wish that she was in school with those kids. I mean, there's nothing more sad than that. It's crazy. And even the craziest part also is that social workers came to this family a few times. But nothing happened.
At one point, Kevin goes to the hospital for one reason or another, and the people at the hospital notice that his father, Calvin, I believe, has sores all over his arm, which, you know, which are very indicative of drug abuse. So they say, okay, we should probably check into these children. So they come to the house, not once, not twice, but three times, and they decide that this is an okay situation for these children to live in.
On one hand, it's crazy that Nazario didn't do anything in this situation, but on another hand, she took her power as a journalist to report this story. And actually, in the end, it did have some positive results because everyone was made more aware of the situation.
Right, and she was doing this for the greater good, and I do respect her for that position. And she even goes on to say that she didn't believe that they were in danger, right? Adrienne, you told me about that quote.
Yes. So in an article that Nazario wrote, she wrote, "Throughout my reporting, I was clear in my mind about one thing. If I felt these children were in imminent danger, I would immediately report them to child welfare authorities. Yes, they were clearly being neglected, yet I never felt the three children I spent time with were in imminent danger."
I don't understand that because she saw almost every child she mentioned at some point was not only physically abused, hit, smacked, punched, and also emotionally abused.
The fact that children were starving, to me, is imminent danger. To the fact that they had bruises on their arms, were being screamed at, were living in moldy homes, sleeping on semen-covered mattresses. That, to me, is the definition of imminent danger. But I don't know. She did some serious reporting on her end.
At what point is she putting her work above the safety of these children? That's the question.
At one point, I think she does it throughout. I mean, just like agreeing to be like, okay, guys, I'm going to be with you for 4 months as you shoot up with heroin, as you forget to feed your child, as you drag your child on the street begging for change to buy more drugs. Like, from the beginning, she felt like that she was above it all, I feel like.
And that's where I start to lose respect for her, because I think there is a way to do investigative journalism and immersive journalism like this that you can have integrity. I understand that she was seeing the overall good that this piece would do.
I think if we look at the aftermath after the story was published, there is some good in it. There were some changes. So after the article was published, Nazario received over 1,000 emails. And this was in 1997. So that's a lot of emails for back then. And right. So basically, the story had an impact because within 24 hours of publication, child abuse reports in Los Angeles increased by 25% within 24 hours, which is nuts. And then over time, a few weeks later, that number rose to 45%. And another thing that kind of came out that was pretty good for this county is that the county ordered an audit on the Child Welfare Agency to look into the cases that they were exploring, and more funds were allocated to addictive moms. So it's twofold. So she did her job as a journalist because she wrote a story that she witnessed, and she wrote it with purpose, obviously, and it had a positive impact. I just feel like when she was in it, especially for a 4-month period of time, that's the part where for me it's a little bit iffy.
And I'm not saying that there wasn't a greater good to this. I think this piece deserved to be written, but I don't know if it had to be written this way for the same effects to happen. I really don't believe that. I think there could have been a lot of these similar stories told where you watched a child for a day or two or whatever it was, and then when you saw one of these, you know, as we had on our list, imminent danger list, when you saw imminent danger, then it was over.
And it's also good to point out also that another result from this article being published is that Tamika, the story that we first spoke about, she was placed into a foster home.
It was work that made change. And that's what all good journalism should do, is create change. That's what we all dream of, right?
Yes.
But I don't know, what kind of journalist do we want to be, Adrian?
I personally do not think that I will ever be able to do this type of hardcore journalism, because I feel like I would be too connected to the story, and I would just feel bad. Like, I don't have the heart for that.
Well, for me, I think I'm kind of opposite. For me, I'm usually able to separate and not become emotional, I would say, when it comes to speaking to people and things like that. But again, there's a line between letting someone suffer and feeling like you're helping the public. According to the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics, ethical journalism treats sources, subjects, colleagues, and members of the public as human beings deserving of respect. It also goes on to say, show compassion for those who may be affected by news coverage. Use heightened sensitivity when dealing with juveniles and sources or subjects who are inexperienced or unable to give consent.
I can't picture her in her room watching this, just standing against the wall and like writing on a notepad. That to me is a crazy picture. Two women on the floor shooting up heroin, a daughter's passed out on a dirty mattress, and you're just like on the side being like, oh, okay, let me note this down.
How is it possible? Again, it's hard for me to believe it. It really is.
There are so many things to the story that just don't make sense, and that I feel like we could speak about for hours and hours and hours.
I think it's really funny that we thought at first that it would be hard to talk about this for 15 minutes.
And one more thing I'd like to point out that I read was that after this article was published, the LA County joined forces with schools and sent letters home from the DA's office if they noticed that a child looked like they were being neglected or abused or stopped attending school, and they kind of made a summons for the parents to come in and meet with the school to make sure that everything was okay at home. So there were some.
It was good.
There was good. But the way that we got to the good is the part that I don't know if I'm okay with.
Once she saw something that clearly was putting them in imminent danger, maybe she could have stopped with that case and moved on to the next, even if it caused her to cover more cases, if that makes sense.
But do you think that child services would even help with it? Because after even reading the story, they went and visited Ashley and Kevin, and nothing happened. So, did she have to go all the way to even prove a point? Because what if she just told half of Tamika's story? Maybe child services would have never knocked on their door. Maybe she would still be stuck with her mom.
Yeah. No, you have a really good point. And again, maybe this is a person, maybe we need people like Sonia Nazario to be stronger and be able to separate more so that she can do powerful work like this. I don't think there's a lot of human beings that could do this work. In that sense, it was important and it did create change. I'm just having a hard time feeling like it was done in the right way.
I think that's both of our opinions on this story.
I really enjoyed discussing this with you, Adrian.
Yes. I look forward to many, many more episodes of Small Talk, Big Topics.